you look at that person in awe and you go like, oh my God, wow, who is this being? Like, I am so attracted to you. You're so different from how I am and I can't get enough of you. So that attraction, that pull you feel is you wanting some of the things that you've suppressed to come out. And the easiest, most acceptable way for the ego to see those things is in someone else.
Welcome to Partners in Sublime, where we explore the teachings of depth psychology and Vedic philosophy to achieve the highest levels of personal growth and self-actualization. Join me as we tap into the unconscious for intuitive guidance and creative direction. I'm your host, Shagun Chopra. Let's begin.
Welcome to Partners in Sublime. Today, we're going to talk about romantic attraction. And it's the very beginning part of the relationship where you feel this pull towards someone and you don't know how or why. Sometimes you can name it, sometimes you can't, but you just feel this incredible sense of, I need to go toward this person. It's almost like a drug, an addiction, a high. And maybe if you've been in relationships before, that it eventually wears off. But I'm here to explore with you where it comes from and what it is telling you about yourself. So when we grow up, we have an ego. Our ego creates a persona that is how we see ourselves, both internally as well as how we project ourselves to the world. Now, there comes a point in your life where the persona that is created by the ego becomes a bit restrictive. It becomes a bit limiting, doesn't allow you to be anything and everything you want it to be. It's like you have to be a certain way. And those qualities that you've put in your shadow, they are really wanting to and trying to come out. But the grip of the ego is so strong, the ego will not let those qualities come out. So if you've always been the responsible one, then being a little carefree here and there, the ego doesn't like it. It will shame you. It will tell you that's not how we do things. It will tell you that's not who you are. Who do you think you are? What do you think you're doing? That's not how it works. So what we do instead, which is when we are not able to acknowledge what is going on within ourselves, is we project. So when we meet someone who is carefree, who is the opposite of what we are trying to be, you look at that person in awe and you go like, oh my God, wow, who is this being? Like, I am so attracted to you. You're so different from how I am and I can't get enough of you. So that attraction, that pull you feel is you wanting some of the things that you've suppressed to come out. And the easiest, most acceptable way for the ego to see those things is in someone else. Because it's hard to say, I want that in myself when you've been so conditioned for so long. But to see them in someone else, you're like, I like that. I like that about you. So that's how a lot of the attraction works. That's why people say opposites attract, and that's how it typically starts. Now, in very few cases, especially in like the early life romances, there's less of this opposites attract, and there is what I call more of the same. So if you're trying to build your persona, and your persona is, I'm the elite one, I'm the intelligent one, I'm the one who's very confident, you might find yourself getting attracted to a person who has more of what you're trying to embody because you're still trying to get that for yourself. So instead of being like, oh, this is my shadow projected on someone else, it becomes, oh, this is me trying to strengthen my persona by inviting someone into my life who has all the things that I know I'm consciously striving for. So I guess that's the difference. When you're conscious that you want A, B, C, D, and this person is meeting those criteria, you're like, yep, this gives me what I want to have in me, and I'm conscious of it. Let me get this person in my life. versus the other kind where you're not conscious of everything that you've suppressed and you just see all these qualities in someone and you're magnetized by them. It's this unconscious attraction toward that which you cannot pull from yourself. So I hope that makes sense. Now, what happens after the initial attraction? No matter what attracted you to a person, after a point, you're gonna start to see the relationship in a different light. Let's say you met someone who is intellectual like you, who went to like a really good school, carries all of the same big names in their resume that you do, and you're with them. Eventually, you'll look past them. That would not be good enough. You would try to see at a soul level, do you feel that soulful connection with them? Do you feel like this is the kind of partnership you want to build? Do you feel like you can grow together? Because we're always changing. And those things will become more important. And in the other situation, that which we really like in the beginning, we start to despise. So if someone responsible meets someone very carefree who is not ready to settle down, initially there might be a strong pull. Oh my God, this is so exciting. And we call that the golden shadow, because you take parts of yourself and you project it onto your romantic partner and you think, this is the best thing for someone else to have, even though you're not allowing yourself to have it. But when that golden shadow wears off, it just feels like, wow, this person is so different from me. Like, why did I even get attracted to them in the first place? Like, if I want to go left, they want to go right. If I want to do this, they want to do that. Is any part of us cut from the same cloth, or are we just so different? And either way, once you get past that point, you get to see them for who they are and how they're showing up in the relationship. And you get to see your soulful connection with them. You get to go one layer deeper. You're not just interacting at the persona level. You get to see who you really are. You get to see who they really are. You have your own fears and insecurities. They have their own fears and insecurities. And it's about how much you can understand each other and how much you can work together to take your relationship forward. And unfortunately, we only discover that once the initial phase is over. And that's why a lot of relationships end, because people think, you know, you're not who you said you are. I didn't think you were this way. But actually, like, they're not trying to lie to you. It's just your own projection at work. So my recommendation when having a romantic relationship, or actually any relationship, any person you meet, is to notice this sense of admiration, this pull that comes, and use that to learn about yourself. Because the more whole you make yourself, the more you integrate your own shadow and persona, the less you are likely to make bad decisions when it comes to relationships. So to underscore this point, I am going to play the episode of my friend slash client, Sam. She and I talked about a year ago, I would say, in my kitchen as she was visiting. And she started to tell me about this guy that she was seeing. And the more I heard about her story, I couldn't help from sharing my coaching framework with her, because it is so true. She was completely smitten by this person and he sounded so different from how she is. And as we talked, we realized that everything that was attracting her to him was things that she was really craving in herself. And as soon as she started to honor those things in herself, she began to see that this relationship was not going to work. And mind you, she could have come up with a totally different conclusion as well. She could have said, no, actually, it can work. So it's not really about what you do with the relationship, but it's about owning your own projection and using the relationship as a fodder to make yourself whole. And that's why people say, if you think you're enjoying bliss, go get into a relationship with someone and they will find every single place in you that you have been holding on to, and they will trigger it so that you can realize, oh, this was in my shadow. Oh, that was in my shadow. And I am going to no longer stay unconscious of them. I'm going to give them some airtime, let them integrate in my life and make myself whole. Because remember, when we're in the split, when we have to be a certain way and can't be a certain way, always, that's when we are really limited as beings. So as spiritual creative beings, we want to realize that wholeness within ourselves. So listen to this snippet. This is a little bit different from a coaching session because I'm not coaching her life, but I'm talking to Sam about the time that she was coached by me in the past, how she interpreted it, what was going on, and then what she took from it and how her life is different now. And at the end of the session, she also reflects on her previous marriage. And you will see that marriage was a little bit more on the lines of, let me build my ego, like my last attempt to strengthen my ego and my persona of what I have been trying to be. And of course, either way, you learn that it's you, it's your own stuff that you're bringing to the relationship. And it has nothing to do with how compatible or long-lasting or soulful your relationship is actually going to be. So listen in and we'll catch up on the other side. Hi, Sam. I have not seen you in a long time, but I'm really glad you decided to show up today so we could talk a little bit about what I did coach you on back in the day. Let's maybe begin by doing a little refresher. When we met, I would say it was over a year ago. Were you single? Were you dating? What was going on in your life?
I was having some sort of history relapse. I was dating a boy at the time, he was a boy in high school. We dated when we were 16 and fell out of touch. He actually dropped out of high school. So maybe like when we were 17 or 18. And except for like a few social media nudges at some point, we hadn't really talked until the previous year, so 2023. So 20 years after we broke up, we reconnected. And we're dating long distance.
Mm-hmm. What was going on in your life when you reconnected?
And a really incredible number of things. So I had moved back to Chicago, where I'm from, 2 years before, when my mother was in pretty intensive cancer treatment. And over the course of the year that I stayed with her, my marriage ended. I left my job in California, decided I was going to stay in Chicago, found a new job in Chicago at a much lower pay rate than I wanted, but it was like kind of a desperate need to stay moment. We were being called back to work on site in California, so there wasn't the option of doing that for me. A lot of turmoil. I was actually just like I'd kind of given up on dating for a long time. I'd been doing pretty intense caregiving for about a year and a half for my mom, so there just like wasn't a lot of extra emotional energy anyway. And then let's call him Adam, is from the same town I'm from, which is outside of Chicago, and he was in town and contacted me, and we got breakfast and ended up reconnecting that way. And it was in the beginning just like phone conversations over time. And then he was living in Colorado, so I'd say like once a month visits, either he came here or I went there for about 6 months.
Yeah. And I think when we met, you had been doing that for a few months. And I was just asking you some questions about it because on one hand, you seemed excited, but on the other hand, you seemed unsure if this is the person for you. But you were feeling this like strong pull toward him. I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, he's from a time in my life where it's weird, right? Like you're young, so you kind of don't know who you are, but you're also kind of more authentically yourself in a way because you don't have all those like layers of education and like jaded adult experiences. So the person knows you from a time where you were like, I don't know, more primal or something like that. And it felt nice to have someone recognize that part of me versus like all any like academic or professional achievements I've had since then.
And you've had several. So you've gone to top school for law, worked in a law firm, worked at some really cool places.
And right, which is always a veil when you meet people, right? That you're becomes like bigger maybe than you are in some ways. So it was nice to like cut through all that crap in a way. And he liked me for who I was even before all of that.
Yeah. I can see the desire to want to connect beyond your persona, beyond what the world sees you as today. And I think that's something to honor, like that inner part of you that wants that type of connection that's beyond the accolades you've collected. So I totally support that. And I guess the question we were facing at that time, you were facing rather, was like, is this the person for me? And I think some of my questions to you back then focused on what is it that you like about him. So maybe you can answer that question again for me and talk about what attracted you to him, besides the need for just wanting to be seen for who you are and not your persona.
Yeah, and I should say, like, where I was like really not in a place of wanting to date. So I think he had to kind of like get me through. It got me through all of that too. Like, I was not isolated. Obviously, I was with my mom continuously, but I was, that part of my life seemed like it was kind of over or something like that, or it was like kind of indefinitely over. Adam is like, I think he fancies himself sort of a Steve Jobs type person. He's been like inordinately good with computers since he was a very young child. And that has allowed him to like operate outside of most kinds of conventional education and employment environments. Like, he is just very proficient at this and like acknowledged at that. And he never finished college. I actually think he might have gotten a GED, like did not technically finish high school either, but he's like incredibly successful in his own way. He also, while doing that, took like a decade and a half of his life where he was just living in a van and climbing, like free solo type climbing all over the West, and then making enough money through his like technological competence to just like fuel that lifestyle in a way that was really invigorating to him. So I think, as someone who has always like checked all the boxes and like done all the things in terms of education and employment and responsibilities in general, so like everything, he was, the way he lived to me was so attractive because it was so freeing, right? He was doing all this stuff without reference to what other people expected him to do, what would appear as successful to most people, I think. And he's always just been like a very independent thinker, I would say, and just seemed very unbound in ways that I have never been able to be.
Yeah, that's such a good description because I think where we went from there was what are these qualities about him that you maybe are not having in your life, which makes him so attractive. So the fact that he was unconventional, unbound to regular things, and he was not spending his life checking the boxes like you were, like I can only imagine how attractive that felt. It's
Yeah.
almost like you've met God type of feeling, like, oh my God, this person is everything I want to be.
Right. And I think there's like certain choices I've made in my life that have edged me this way. Like, I don't have children and don't plan to. I don't even have pets. Like, I do crave a certain kind of freedom that I have not been able to execute in my life. And he was just fully doing it. He was fully doing it. I will say he, by the time I met him, however, and I mean, I guess this is the corollary, and I think this is what was starting to be the rub when I saw you. The thing about that type of way of being is that it doesn't necessarily make you a very good partner. And he had just ended a marriage and had two small children. Like, I don't even think he was married for like very many years, and it fell apart kind of quickly. But now he had children, so things were like settling for him in a way that I could tell he was not super comfortable with. And like, for me, I totally understood that I could not be his like primary responsibility at that time. But I would say, living the way that he does, it's hard for him to make anyone really a responsibility for him.
So you could see certain aspects that, people would call red flags, or that may not be something you want, but the pull from the other qualities was just so strong that you were like, but I definitely want that. And I think to cut to what you did after that is basically you looked at those things that you admired in him that drew you out as a reflection of your own suppressed qualities that you couldn't have in you. So, talk to me about what that process was like.
Okay, I hope you explain this for everyone and like the expletive part of this, because for me, this was fantastic and so helpful. I was in Shuggin's kitchen, and she explained to me about my shadow self and that that's what I was actually looking for. Which is, I mean, okay, I can, I'll, you will do a better job of this, but let me try to do it fast because this was in my own mind processing it, is like how I arrived at the truth, I suppose. You learn a bunch of you t okay, you acquire a bunch of skills or personality traits in your youth that help you, that are adaptive to you at that time. I have a very irresponsible family, so I've always been a profoundly responsible person, and like d multiple divorces, like very working class. So for me, financial security, employment security was all very important. So I became this, like, I'm a very type A, uptight, conventionally successful person. I, and not just academically and employment wise, also, I think I feel a duty like to my family members and the people around me. And when I say that I will do something, it is like very important to me that I always do the thing. and I derive value from this, but it is also exhausting, obviously. Someone like Adam, who doesn't have these kinds of pulls on himself at all, would obviously seem to me as like some kind of beacon of hope or opportunity. Or I see those qualities and they are attractive to me because I actually want them in myself. And I think we also discussed that you develop these character traits at a time in your life where it's like formative and helpful. And then as you become older and your life circumstances change, they can become actually like maladaptive. Because you no longer, I have my own house. I control my own environment. I do have a steady income. Like, I'm living comfortably and well. And do I really need to be continuously making myself available on all levels to all people all the time? Like, maybe I don't. Maybe I actually don't. And am I just trying to capture some aspect of that through my relationship with Adam as opposed to actually just living it in my daily experience? And it was that angle was, oh my gosh, it was like the scales fell from my eyes. Like, once I realized that in my own life, I could just like step back from the things that were oppressing me a little bit and have a similar sense of that kind of freedom or like lightness in life, it like immediately became apparent to me that that relationship was toxic. Because that's all he was providing me. Like, he was not a good partner. We didn't even live in the same place. It was extremely difficult to do like basic things for each other or even be around each other. And I'm finally like at a place in my life where I am established enough. I love Chicago. I love my job. I love being near my family. I've missed them for the decades I've been away. Like, I was not going to move there. And he had small children, so he was not going to move here, right? So there was just not a lot of things about it, in addition to the interpersonal dynamics, weren't great and were not going to work out. And it was, I thought, would be painful, because I remember our high school breakup being very painful. And I do love him. And I feel like he was very important to me for a lot of kind of like big moments in my life, really, over decades. But it was, at the end, it ended up being very easy, actually, to just say, I can't do this. I don't want to do this anymore. I'd rather like focus on building my life here in the ways that I want to, instead of like frenetically flying to Colorado twice a month or whatever.
Yeah. It's like a whale lifted off of you. And this thing that you were wrestling with for months just suddenly became clear to you. Like, what is it that you were trying to do? This part of you that had been suppressed for so long was just trying to find some airtime.
Yeah.
And once you give it that time, you're like, actually, this doesn't seem as attractive to me for a relationship anymore. It doesn't feel like that it's right for me.
Yeah. So, what else am I getting out of it, actually? Yeah.
And, you know, there is the cognitive realization of that, like, oh, that's what I'm doing. That's what, like, I'm seeking in others what I'm not expressing in myself. But then what did it look like in your life on a practical level once you realized that these qualities, you know, your soul, yourself, was really craving to express these qualities? So what did you do with that insight?
Yeah. So I mean, it was good timing, because when I first moved back, I think I mentioned I'd taken a lower paying job. So I've been working like three to four jobs at the same time.
It's very responsible of you.
Right. But I finally had gotten to a point where I was at an income level for my primary job that it was okay for me to drop several of those. And with some budgeting, I could probably just rely on this one job if I want to. So I'm like, the busyness and the like, duties that I felt like I had to a lot of outside forces, I kind of started eliminating. Even my mom, she lives about an hour and a half from here. Love her. I don't need to go every month. It ends up being it's 3 hours round trip. It's on a train schedule. It's like not easy even to get to the train station. She has a car. She can come here sometimes. I don't always have to be the one who does all the things. We go to like the opera together downtown. She'll like meet me after work instead of just me. I mean, I do go there pretty regularly and help her with like physical labor stuff that she can't do anymore. But like, you know, once a month, once every other month, that's totally fine. And I live in a city like with my cousins around me and people are coming through continuously. So it's not like I'm actually isolated and I don't need it to be a thing that I don't need. Every time she needs me there, I can say, is this an emergency thing or is this something we can like put on the list for the next time I'm planning to be there? And I do think it actually like kind of fundamentally changed my attitude toward my job. I always have jobs that are sort of like a vocation to me. Like I need a mission-driven place. I can't do things just to do them. So I work at a nonprofit, and I was really just going so hard there because I really wanted to prove myself and I wanted the raise and all this stuff. And then I think I just had this moment where I realized like this place The salary isn't that great considering like my actual academic background and abilities, but part of the equation is work from home time and like just not super pressing deadlines, you know? So like lean in, not in the Sheryl Sandberg sense, but lean into what they're offering you actually, which is like real work-life balance because it's just not that demanding of an environment. And if I was just telling you this over chat, I recently had an afternoon where I had very little going on and there was a movie in theaters that I really wanted to see. And it was like the last day of screening. And I just like went and saw a movie in the middle of the day. My work was done. I checked my email on both sides of it. Everyone was taken care of. It's fine. I work a lot of weekends that are not compensated. So like it's fine. You know, I can cut out for an afternoon and do a thing that's like intensely rewarding to me and will always be worth the time. I'm realizing earlier, Sam, like straight A Sam from high school and earlier would never, never, never do that because just being there and following all the rules mattered so much to me that I would have, even if I had tried to do it, I would have not experienced any enjoyment. Whereas now I'm both willing, I'm a willing participant and enjoying it fully because I understand that I'm meeting my responsibilities to the extent that they need to be met. And there's no reason to be putting myself on the line more than I need to be at all.
So all that pressure was coming from yourself and not from your job.
Right.
And so when you realize that you've been craving more freedom, more autonomy, more like unconventional way of living compared to how you've always done it in this like utterly responsible manner, it
Right.
becomes easier to be to make those choices on a day-to-day basis and like benefit from them essentially.
Right. I think there's this sense of like the time, like, well, the time in your life that is actually yours, how much time is that? Right. And when you have a job and when you have all these responsibilities, it's not really that much. Like, how much time can you really have said that you live for yourself? But I think I'm beginning to understand that there are ways to fit the kind of conventional requirements of life into time. Right. Like, I can make it beneficial to me. I'm getting a lot out of it while also doing the things I need to do because I'm thinking of it from that angle as opposed to just doing the most responsible thing all the time.
How does it feel on a day-to-day basis to know that you don't have to be the person that you had grown to be?
Oh my gosh. It's a tremendous relief. It's a relief. I mean, I have a lot of hobbies that I will never be able to monetize. I mean, I love reading. I love going to see movies, things like that. And I just, now that's become like those have become criteria in my life. Like, am I doing that daily? Am I doing that at a regular enough cadence that I feel like I'm engaging with the things I love? That stuff is starting to matter more. Am I working out? I'm very into like wanting to live in my own home by myself in a healthy way for a very long time. So, like, am I taking care of my body in a way that's going to allow me to do that? Having been around sick people for the last couple of years, it's made me very conscious of that too. So it basically has allowed me to like realign my priorities with my actual values in a way that I was not allowed to do when so much of that was external.
Yeah. So much of your growing up was in response to the chaos in your family that it's taken some time for your mind to adjust to be like, no, I'm no longer in that chaos. And I have more ways of being available to me than I did in the past.
Right. And what does thriving actually look like? I'm so used to just responding to a continuous crisis, right? And then that was being successful. But when they're, it's so interesting also. I feel like things that used to appear to me as crises like just don't anymore. So much.
Give me an example.
I feel, I don't know, something happened when I came out of the care. This is more a process of like coming out of the caregiving years, I think, where like small things kind of fell away. Okay, so I bought this house. It's very old. It has a lot of problems. Actually it's a co-op, so we're having to work on our plumbing. There's all these like very expensive things that need to get fixed because it's an old, beautiful, but old building. And I think I've always been obsessed with immediately making my space exactly the way that I need it to be for me to be super productive and everything to be good. And I'm just realizing like, no, I'm going to be here for a really long time. And like, there are some furniture I kind of want or whatever, but like, let's make sure the pipes work. You know, like all just, it's interesting that I have not like obsessively made it all come together. I mean, it's still a nice space, but everything doesn't need to get fixed at one time at all, you know? And I'm with this perspective, it's like, okay, sure, I don't have like the furniture I would want, but who cares? Like, let's fix the pipes. And then in 5 years, we can think about replacing the couch or whatever. It just doesn't, all this stuff that used to be like, everything has to be just right. Everything has to be just right for me all the time to like lay the groundwork perfectly. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter anymore. Like, it doesn't have to be just right. And if it's like a little too messy, I'll go work at a cafe in the morning. It's fine. You know, I'll fix it when I have time to fix it. It's just not a big deal. I'm not going to beat myself up about that.
That is just amazing because perfectionism can take a long time to shake off. And for someone like you who's just always been trying to do things very right, very quickly, very on time, to be like, it's okay if I don't have the couch I want, or it's okay if the home is not looking that great and I'll go somewhere else. Like, that's huge. I hope
Yeah.
you see that growth in you.
Right. Your home serves you. You don't live to serve your home.
Could you also reflect on your prior relationships? You've been married before, you've had other long-term, I suppose, relationships before that. Looking back from the lens of like you were living your persona, how do you think you picked those relationships in hindsight?
They're all so very different. I mean, I think I didn't have a good guiding principle at all, and so I was just reacting to whatever the most recent thing was. Yeah, I mean, they're really, it's like men from all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of experiences. So the marriage, most my marriage that I fell apart when I was coming back to Chicago was, I feel like it was like my last ditch attempt to like do the responsible thing. Like I had married someone who was very close to his family. I'm very close to my family. I didn't really want to have kids, but he did, and I thought that was like a deal that I could make, right? That we would have this whole, we were like empire building. It wasn't like just like having a kid and having a house. It was like we had this whole support network. We're tapped into all of these like cultural and familial resources. We're doing something bigger than just single family with single family home, dog, car. And then when my mother got very sick, it became clear to me that like the actual emotional support that I assumed like went with that deal was like not actually there. Yeah, so again, I guess it's sort of like the appearance of things versus in what you are taught to assume goes with those types of things, and then your own lived experience of it and what the actuality is just don't match up. And then what are you supposed to do with that information, right? Like you've been told that these are all the things that you need to like feel supported and comfortable and loved, and then when things become actually hard, it becomes clear that that's not actually the answer.
So what I'm hearing you say is like when you met your ex-husband, he represented more of what you had to offer to yourself. You were trying to be responsible. You were trying to be family oriented. You were trying to be very dutiful. And then you meet someone who was pretty similar to you in that sense.
Yeah.
And so you think, okay, this is great.
Yeah. Okay. I would say it's true. He does have a lot of this, like similar qualities to myself. Like he's, again, very successful and also like really emotionally with it for a man, right? Like I felt like in social situations, you could just leave him on his own and he was like doing great. He's a super charming guy, and like very concerned about other people and like a great conversationalist. And I think the thing I saw with him, oh, this is going to be interesting. I think it was more like almost socioeconomic. Like his family is close, but they're phenomenally wealthy and successful. And I love my family, but they're a freaking mess. Like everybody's divorced, everybody's an alcoholic. Like it's a mess. His family was close and fun and like playing like mentally stimulating games at parties. Do you know what I'm saying?
You were a lot more put together.
Yes, where it felt like, oh yeah, this is like how you raise successful children, right? Like my brother and I both turned out great because we are really adaptive and versatile and like had a lot faced a lot of challenges and did a good job. But like, I mean, I think at the time I was thinking like, how do you raise kids who are have all these abilities and aren't like spoiled whiners? You know what I mean? And so his family seemed like actually the antidote to that because they were so loving and so thoughtful and also like really successful and like thinking all the time, you know, and like just like interesting, curious people.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, it sounds like you were wanting to be that economically stable, familially stable person. You were still
I
trying.
had already climbed social groups, right? So I was not like working class like I was, like I grew up. So then there is this whole like, well, how does this work then? Because this is not my milieu. Like no one in my, there's not a single family member modeling this for me at all. So this looked like the most promising way. And I mean, it is disorienting, I think, for a working class person to become upper middle class in the United States. Like it's, ugh, the culture is kind of gross, right? And you like actually like miss some of the things that you had when your family was like a little bit more scruffy and just had to like band together and get things done. Like there's a lot of meaning in people as opposed to things, I think they say in like, you know, working class and like poverty level families. Like you invest in people because you can't invest in things. And so when you move away from that, there is like a kind of loneliness or like a kind of lack of guiding principle anymore, because you have too much leisure and too many resources, and it's like not really clear what you're supposed to be doing anymore.
What you're saying is it's not survival oriented. Like
Exactly.
you get to a point where you're like, oh, what's my life beyond survival?
Right.
And I feel like that's what happened with you. You had this idea of who you needed to be in order to survive and thrive in the world. And you find a person who will support you being that way, who would support you being stable, responsible, you know, financially okay. And so that relationship was more of an attempt at like persona building and strengthening, like more of the same, more of what I've been trying to cultivate. Let's get even more of that into my life. And then it helped you reach that epitome where most of us get, where you're like, okay, this is the way I need to be. Let's keep doing this. Let's keep doing this. Let's keep doing this. And you get to the top of that ladder and you're like, oh, this is not what I thought it would be. That's when you reach that state of meaninglessness. Like, what is this really about? And it makes you start to question things. And I think I read in a book recently, I wish I could remember the author, but it's like your midlife is like working really hard to climb the ladder. And then when you get to the top, you realize it's been up against the wrong wall. And so you realized during that relationship, like, wait, all this that I've been seeking in myself, in my partner, like it's not cutting it for me. It's not giving me meaning. So to go back to the drawing board and see what really does. And I heard you now and even in the past mention your values and what is it that really makes your heart jump. And you're trying to have more of those things in
Oh,
your
and
life.
I definitely do. I definitely do. I think when I was in that relationship, I was pretty continuously unhappy. Like, that's the truth of it. And the things I was questioning were not the right things, I don't think. So I don't want to say, I honestly, I think my mom being sick and me having to like deal with the reality of that for a year and a half is what really helped me reorient myself to this, because all that crap kind of falls away, right? And you just start realizing, like, okay, actually, I don't have that long to be trying to figure this out. So I have some pretty good clues. Like, I know what my interests are, right? So, like, why don't I start pursuing those instead of asking these questions? I mean, I was in the Bay Area. It's hard, right? We were fixated on how will we afford a house? How will I have childcare? How will I, manage to have any savings? I just moved back to the Midwest and bought myself a house on my nonprofit salary. I have a job that I like. Every day I feel like I'm like my authentic self at work, because everybody cares about the same things that I do. And all that stuff just like doesn't seem to matter anymore. I mean, it is a little bit like keeping up with the Joneses stuff, I guess. Like, all of that kind of has entirely fell away during that time. And it's very easy for me to ground myself that way. Whereas before, like, I think I was genuinely unhappy and I needed to keep asking questions and trying to find something. I just think I didn't have good direction to get out of it.
Yeah, I do see how just staring death in the face, whether it's your own or your mom's,
Yeah.
would
You do
really
have
help.
unlimited time. You just don't have unlimited time. Yeah.
Yeah. It gives that sense of like, whoa, like how long am I gonna keep trying to live by the playbook that I created in childhood or adolescence to be like that's the way to be? Then the voice of your true self just gets louder and louder in the face of an existential crisis like that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That was such a good thing that you were able to shift from let's get more of what I think I need to survive to hold on. Like, this doesn't feel right. If I'm gonna die, like, this stuff doesn't matter anyway. And
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to live a life that gives me meaning and is not derived from all these social norms and personal norms that I imposed on myself growing up.
Yes, that's exactly the way it's felt. I was originally afraid. So my mom is, she's not officially in remission, but will be within the next year, if everything goes well. And I was afraid that I would like lose this sense of grounding, but I think that it's almost unshakable, I feel like, at this point. Which is great. It's great, actually, because I was afraid that I would just fall back into those other things. But it's not, I don't know, it's like once your vision is fixed, it's never becomes impaired again or something. I don't know. It's been
No,
much.
I think you're right, because once people realize that they've spent their whole life just polishing up their persona and it like shatters like a mask and it just goes, it's very hard to put it back together. You can't unsee it, you can't undo it. It doesn't mean that there isn't the temptation to keep going back to those ways. I'm sure there are days you have where you go like, what am I doing? I need like more money, more job, more whatever. And then you are able to discard that voice of the ego, step back into what is it that I really want, and address it from that place. So those things do happen. Like, I think it's like a little bit of a misbelief that, oh, once I've conquered something, it's never going to come back. In fact, it's going to keep coming back again and again. It just will be a little bit easier for you to see because you're more conscious of it, easier for you to respond to, and then you can get back to that centered state much more quickly and easily as time goes on.
So that was Sam. As always, she was very honest, articulate, and self-reflective of her relationship journey. I think it's really incredible that she was so quick to recognize that, oh my God, this relationship is just parts of me trying to come out. And she really honored that. And I can see the change in her. I've known her for a few years and I can tell how much progress she's made in how she views herself and how she views her life. And it's also really incredible that she could recognize that in the past, things like financial security motivated her, or family values motivated her to choose people who had more of the same, only to realize that there wasn't that underlying soulful connection between her and her ex-husband. So we all learn and we all make mistakes along the relationship path. They are the best teacher that you can have. So I hope that this episode inspires you to look at your own relationships more critically. If you're dating, you might see, oh, what is it that I'm really liking in this person? And how can I bring that into my own life so I can see this relationship more clearly? And if you're already in a long-term relationship, maybe that'll help you see how the arc of your relationship went on the way it did, because maybe you had the initial high and then the low, and then you settled at this more authentic place. So either way, I hope this helps you. And if you would like to get coached on the show, I'd be more than happy to have you and discuss your own relationships. It's this area that promises tremendous growth, and it can be such a big source of life satisfaction that I feel really passionate about it. So feel free to share your story with me and come on if you like. And that's it for today. I'll see you next time. Bye.
Thank you for being my partner in Sublime today. I hope you enjoyed diving into the unconscious with me. To ask a question or get coached on the show, visit shagunchopra.com/ask or click the link below. See you next time.